The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello? Old Dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success.
Today's topic is my 10 biggest mistakes. Hey, I hope you guys are doing good out there. Before we get started, I just want to touch base with you as I always do. We are kind of winding down here, the end of the year here, and I promised you I'd try to bring in some good strong content, stuff that you can use, you can take with you here. So I am hoping that this will be one of those shows. And you know, every real estate investor makes mistakes. In fact, it's an important part, I think, of the learning process. What's important is what we learn from and do with those mistakes and how they help make us better investors. That's the key thing. I you know, I'm never going to say, hey, I don't make mistakes, because I have made tons of mistakes. And the great thing about it is that I've learned from every one of those. And that is what makes us better investors, right? Is learning from those mistakes and doing it that much better the next time around. So in this episode, I'm, you know, going to talk about my top 10. I think there's a lot more than 10, but these are sort of the top ones that I really got sort of the best lessons from. So let's take a look at this. My 10 biggest mistakes. Now, there's a quote that says, failure is the key to success. Each mistake teaches us something. And that is so true. It's an important lesson learned. And I'd even go one step further and say, mistakes are a gift. Without them, the learning process can take so much longer. But it's always better, when possible, to learn from the mistakes of others. That's why I always ask my guests to share their mistakes and lessons they've learned, to hopefully save you that personal pain point there. And I know some people kind of feel, well, why are you emphasizing mistakes here? But I think they get it. If they've been a real estate investor for any period of time, they know that there is true value in sharing the mistakes that we make as well as what we've learned from them. In today's podcast, I'm going to share, you know, my own stuff. I'm kind of opening up my vulnerability here, and I will share my own personal real estate investing mistakes over the last 6 years, maybe seven there, which I think will match some of the mistakes of many of my guests that I've interviewed over the years too. And but, you know, I think more importantly, how can you prevent the same thing from happening to you? And that's one of the reasons why we do this on this show, is to help you avoid having to make the same mistakes I made and our guests have made. You know, my guests have shared many different mistakes, all of which have been very helpful to me personally in my real estate investing journey. That's one of the great things about hosting this show, is I learn a lot from the guests that I have on. And that's an area that I really, really value. I've avoided a lot of potential problems because of my guests that have shared their mistakes. To be sure, there's a lot that can go wrong when you invest in real estate. I mean, you can overpay for a property, you can buy in the wrong area, use the wrong lender or loan product, or overestimate cash flow. The list goes on and on. The list of mistakes is far too long, in fact, to discuss during this podcast alone. But that's why I wanted to narrow it down to 10 that I think would be something that you would be able to relate to. So let's go ahead and dig in here. Number one, thinking too small. Now, when I look back when I started, I was very, very cautious. In fact, it was like trying to pull teeth to get me to spend any money on real estate at all, because I was, you know, fearful. And I thought, oh man, I can't afford to lose this. This is, you know, all I've got, you know, just, I was really concerned. And I started by spending $150,000, actually a little bit more than that, probably $50,000 to $60,000 per property, but about around, you know, $150,000 plus of a cash purchase of two Class C single family homes and one Class C duplex in Atlanta and in Memphis. The idea here was that I would be able to generate good cash flow. That was always my goal. Then, after a year or two, I managed to borrow against these three properties. Now, keep in mind, I paid cash for them, so they had nothing but equity in them. I borrowed against those three properties to get a $100,000 down payment on a 22-unit apartment. And in that, I also took out an additional $50,000 for rehab and upgrading on this 22-unit apartment as part of a value-add deal. Now, what I'm saying here is, why did I think too small? Well, I actually could have just went ahead and used that $150,000 to just skip buying those other properties and have gone right to buying the multifamily. Now, I found a multifamily property, a 22-unit apartment in Indianapolis for $350,000. Now, it wasn't listed like that initially. It was listed at four, but we were able to negotiate the price down. And it generated a lot more cash flow than those three properties did for me. But if I would have just gone straight to those, not only would I have got better cash flow, but there was some amazing equity that took place as I upgraded that apartment and implemented a value add strategy. So instead of waiting the 2 or 3 years that I had to after buying those other properties, if I would have went right there, I could have not only generated better cash flow, but I could have leveraged that property after 2 to 3 years because it had gone up in value because of the value add strategy, and I could have bought a much larger apartment. Now, then I would have been able to establish a strong track record earlier. I could have been real successful as a commercial multifamily operator earlier in the game than I was by waiting and being a little overly cautious. So I'm not saying it's bad to be that. If you want to be a conservative investor, you know, I would say limit your risks. And that's what I generally do. But I'm just saying, in the beginning, it was such a good time of, there's so much growth going on in the multifamily marketplace, especially, that I really could have jumped into the game a lot faster. Number two, investing in cheap properties. And when I started investing, again, those first three I mentioned, they were all Class C properties. Having invested heavily in Class C properties early on, I have some pretty strong opinions, but I also want, you know, to now look at this in light of, you know, current economic times and how the economy may affect these properties or those properties. There are some real estate investors who seek out Class C properties because of the amazing potential in renovating and upgrading them. They allow real estate investors opportunities to enjoy a significant return on investment by making small improvements on the properties. With proper upgrades, they can realize larger returns. Now, Class C properties do have a higher cap rate than your B's and your A's. But even a Class C, property, there are opportunities there. But the reason why it is a higher return is that it's also a higher risk. And that's where you have to really take that caution. So even though I paid very little money for three properties, $50,000 to $60,000 on an average per property, including one duplex, I had a lot of issues with tenants, the quality of tenants that type of property attracts, with just things that had to be upgraded, because as a Class C property, it's an older property, so you're paying more for repairs and maintenance, and that's something I didn't anticipate. I think I could have saved a lot of money if I would have gone just to a Class B, for example, and I was able to grow that property or leverage that property into another. But instead, I was dealing with a lot of tenant issues. I was doing Section 8 and having to battle with, some of the not only the some of the tenants that were kind of taking advantage of that, but I was dealing with just the local, city or county force that was inspecting those properties and just asking for ridiculous upgrades constantly at each inspection. So there were some issues there, but I would say if you can avoid Class C properties, do it. Number three, overestimating cash flow. Now, if you buy a rental property, for example, that brings in $2,000 in monthly rent and your monthly mortgage payment, including taxes and insurance and so forth, is, let's say, $1,500, you may think you have a $500 monthly cash flow. But then there's all those other little expenses in there that aren't factored into that mortgage payment. And, there are repairs, there are administrative costs, there are these other things. And you begin to realize that with each analysis that you do of a property, you remember, oh, wow, this is something I forgot to factor in previously. And so that cash flow gets reduced more and more and more. And you realize, gee, here's something I thought I would make, at least 400 in, and I'm lucky to squeak out 150. So you really have to know your numbers. It's really key. And cash flow is something that, especially as a retired person, you really want to be strong, and you want to be able to depend upon it. So there are a lot of factors there. Again, that was one of my biggest mistakes, is just overestimating what I thought my cash flow would be. And number four, I mentioned this here, avoid Class C properties. One of my personal mistakes is that I did buy a bunch of Class C's, and because of that, the attraction was they were cheap. And Class C properties are usually older buildings that have more than 30 years with minimum amenities, and they're outdated systems and mechanicals you have problems with and so forth. So, another one is that I should have went in there with the idea of avoiding Class C properties. I know I sound like I repeated that, but that was talking about just cheap properties in general. Sometimes we're attracted to cheap properties because, I could get five of these and maybe only get two Class B's for the same price. But, those Class B's are probably in the long term going to be more valuable to you in terms of cash flow and appreciation than that Class C. Number five, not vetting property managers more carefully. Now, when I first bought my first properties, I was buying turnkey. And so it was a package deal. And I thought, wow, not only do they rehab the property, but they have this built-in property manager. And I thought, well, that's great, because I'm buying it from these people. They're going to be accountable as a property management firm too. But that was not the case. A lot of times, you'll have a turnkey, I'm going to say a lot of times, but enough times, you'll have a turnkey provider that will take that property management and job it off to somebody else. In other words, these are not their employees. This is just a property manager, maybe in the area that works with them, but they're not really responsible. And so I went through so many property managers with those turnkeys that it was very, very frustrating for me. I didn't know a lot about vetting property managers. In fact, I didn't know anything about property managers, period. And as a result of that, I made some poor decisions, and I had vacancies that went too long. I had turnovers that took too long. There were just a lot of situations that were just really, really difficult to deal with. So again, learn how to vet property managers, and there's a whole, we have a whole, I mean, a lot of podcasts and blog articles about the questions that you should be asking those property managers before you hire them. So that's a key one. Number six, not checking out the market better. Now, in the beginning, I was kind of naive. I thought I knew everything, right? You go in there, there's just certain things that you have to look at in a market, especially if you're an out-of-state investor like I was. You have to look at things like, what are the real estate prices doing in that area? Are they going up? Are they declining? Are they stagnant? What are projections for the prices? Are they staying stable? Because a lot of times prices and rents, kind of react the same. If it's stagnant, you're going to have rents that aren't going up. You're going to have prices that aren't going up too. Things like, what is the local job situation? Job growth percentages, are they going up or down? Are new employees coming to the area? Is the market dependent on a single employer, like a large university or something, or an industry? You should be compiling those unemployment stats and trends and get a good feel for what's happening with the employment situation. And then just look at the overall local economy. Are businesses closing or moving out of the area? Are commercial real estate values and office occupancy rates increasing? Is there a redevelopment plan, by the city or by the county that's going on in there? Does the city have a major growth initiative? Things like this that are really critical to investors and the value of your property. Number seven, wasting time with the wrong funding source. Again, in the beginning, I was very naive. I just went with the local bank that was referred to me, maybe by the broker or by my property manager. And I would waste all this time going through just tons of due diligence for their side, that where they're vetting me. And then after going through all this, okay, I've already got this property under contract, I'd find out I didn't get the loan. And then I had to go to somebody else. And then, I was afraid it was going to take the same amount of time. So I actually would go to somebody that was almost like a private money source that cost a lot more, just so that I didn't lose the deal. But it's so critical to, when you go into a deal, is to know what you have available to you. Not only the funds you're going to put into a down payment and you're going to use for rehab, but do you have a dependable funding source? Is it a bank or a credit union or something that should have been set up in advance? For me, that's what I should have had going into these deals. It also gives you leverage too in negotiating too, when you've got that pre-approval or at least a very heavy sort of support there financially. Number eight, not having sufficient operational reserves. Now, this is one I didn't suspect that I would need. You should have at least a six-month reserve there to back yourself up pending anything that could be happening, not only in the economy as on a sort of a macro basis, but on the micro level as well. And especially if you're investing in C properties, there are things that can happen that you didn't suspect. And you may not have caught in that inspection or in your preliminary due diligence. And so you've got to have that sort of that extra funds in there to be able to not only, cover your operational, like I said, I didn't think I'd have a problem with the property management. And as a result, I had all these months of vacancies that I had to deal with. And I had to keep paying the mortgage. So I had to tap into other funds in order to cover the mortgage in those cases. So really important that you have those reserves and a healthy reserve to back you up on any investment that you would do. Number nine, don't just buy for cash flow. Now, I know I sound like I'm talking against myself here because our motto here is cash flow is king, right? It should be, at least for me as a retiree, I think it should be a key factor. You know, you want to be able to know that you've got a steady income that's going to be coming in. As I started to invest more, I began to see the advantage of equity too, especially during the years that I was investing heavily. It was still kind of post-recession, and their properties were going up in value. So about halfway through my investing efforts, I sought to build in that equity factor more, buying properties that had built-in equity. So when I signed those escrow papers, I knew I already had equity built into that property, and I knew I could leverage that. In addition, I learned about and sought out emerging markets more. And these are areas that were already poised to go up or were already going up in value that just added that much more. You know, when I came to the end of my six-year goal, it was really, you know, the cash flow was great. And I was thankful for the cash flow. It was the equity that really gave me what I needed to be able to retire with confidence. Even though I had the cash flow there, the equity is really what I was able to sort of cash in on and then move into more passive investments. So, when I say don't buy just for cash flow, I still stand by that. If you can build in an equity play, if you can find off-market properties and you can buy under-market properties, do it. It's just going to build that much more. It's like an insurance policy on that property. And number 10, the final one here, not having a mentor. Okay, big mistake. I had done my research, read the books, listened to the podcast, watched YouTube, attended boot camps, and I just felt I knew what I needed to know. And I just wanted to jump in. I was anxious and maybe a little bit too anxious. And I kind of felt I didn't need a mentor, that I had it all figured out. But, you know, in reality, I didn't. And looking back, I see most of my mistakes could have been avoided if I had first sought out a good mentor to bounce things off of before I purchased a property. And, I was talking about the turnkey properties, if I would have had a mentor that I could have bounced that off of. And, I was just, these properties looked like they were fine to me. I didn't even think of going into inspections and so forth because it was a turnkey property. Everything should work. You know, it's guaranteed, right? No, it's not guaranteed. No, that's not right. So that was a really key thing. Later on, I did get mentors, and I was so glad I did because they really opened me up to things that just kind of put me into, you know, super mode, where I was moving ahead faster than I would have dreamed of being able to do it by myself. So if you can get that mentor, it's got to be a priority. Do it before you start your investing. If you already have started, it's never too late to find a good mentor and to work with that mentor. It just makes a world of difference. And those are my 10. I actually have a couple of bonus mistakes, as if we need bonus mistakes here. But anyway, I'd say this is one I love talking to the old guys. You know, the older they are, the better. You know, I just glean from them some such great information. And one of my favorite interviews with a guy named Samuel Freshman. He was went to Stanford Law. He was he wrote literally the book on real estate syndication. A guy that's in Los Angeles. He's been in real estate for, well, gosh, when I interviewed him, 60 plus years. He's probably getting up there, you know, closer to 70 years now. I don't think it was that long, but he's definitely been in real estate for a long time. And I remember asking him the question, like I ask all of my guests, you know, what is, you know, what mistake did you make? What's sort of your biggest mistake? And he had one word answer. Yeah. Selling. Okay. Go selling. Well, how are you going to make any money if you're not selling, you know? And I was kind of surprised that that's what he said, but he's, you know, he basically told me the story. He goes, yeah, I thought I was a hot shot. I was in LA, downtown. I'm selling commercial buildings. I bought this office building for $1 million and I sold it 3 months later for $2 million. And I was bragging to all my buddies and everything. Yeah, you know, I made $1 million. And yeah, you know, back then when you bought it, I mean, that was a heck of a lot of money. But then he says, yeah, but today I see that building every day when I drive into work. And I'm reminded that this building is not worth $2 million. No, today it's worth $100 million. And he's going, why didn't I hold on to it? Anyway, he's a funny guy, but he's a great guy. But, you know, I get it. And, you know, sometimes we, you know, and I guess the other part of his answer too is he said not buying more too. He said I should have bought more real estate because you can't lose by buying more. You just can't, especially when you're buying for the long term. And so I'll have a link to that show that he's on, but it's a real good lesson learned. But anyway, these are my big 10, and I'm sure if you don't already have some of your own, you certainly will if you're going to be in this for the long shot. It's not a bad thing, okay? Don't consider mistakes, you know, something that you can say just by the definition a mistake is something you don't want to do. But I consider it more of a blessing than a curse. And for me, it was like a free education, if you will. Yeah, it's a hard education. It's from the school of hard knocks, without a doubt. But either way, it doesn't mean you shouldn't try to avoid mistakes as best you can. I mean, you're going to have the mistakes anyway. But understand mistakes will happen. And make the best of them. When they do happen, learn from them and chalk it up to experience. The bottom line, if you can learn from other people's mistakes, from this show today, from all of the shows that we've had guests on that have shared their mistakes, remember and learn from what they say about their mistakes. And then from there, you know, hopefully you won't slip up and do the same. You'll find your own way. You'll find your own mistakes. But consider it homework. Learn what needs to change, re-engineer, do it better, and reap the rewards. Well, that's it for now. Please note, old dog listeners, everything presented here today, and there will be some links in here as well, can be accessed in our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode entitled My 10 Biggest Mistakes. 10 out of a million. Anyway, well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.